The house was quiet in the way that only houses can be quiet when everyone inside is pretending not to hear each other breathe. Concetta sat at the kitchen table with the second letter spread before her, the envelope lying open like a wound that had scabbed over and been picked at again. The paper was thin, the sort of cheap stationery that cost pennies in Marseille, and arrived in this village wrapped in layers of post office indifference. She had read it 3 times already. She could recite it back to herself in French, in Italian, in the broken hybrid of both languages that Andrea had spoken when he was tired, when he was drunk, when he was trying to say something that mattered. Ti prego non dimenticare, please do not forget. The words sat on the page like stones. She traced them with her fingertip, feeling the indentation of the pen, the pressure Andrea had put into the ink as though he were trying to push the words through the paper, through time, through whatever wall had been erected between them that October night. The photograph was tucked inside the fold, half hidden, as though Andrea had been ashamed of it or proud of it or both. It showed him standing on a street in Palermo, younger than he should have been, older than the last time she had seen him alive. He was smiling, but it was a smile that belonged to someone else, someone who did not know her name, someone who had not spent 4 years learning the shape of silence. She did not hear him come in. Enzo was a man who had spent his life moving through water, and he had learned to move through air with the same practiced silence, without disturbing it, without leaving a trace. But she felt the shift in the room, the change in pressure, the way the air grew heavier all at once, like the moment before a storm breaks. She did not look up. She kept her eyes on the photograph, on Andrea's face, on the precise angle of light catching the corner of his mouth in a way that made her chest ache. "You shouldn't have that out," Enzo said. His voice was flat, level, the tone he used when he was talking about weather or mending nets or the price of diesel. It was not a request. It was not even a warning. It was simply a statement of fact, delivered in the same register he would use to say the sky was gray or the tide was turning. Concetta folded the letter slowly, deliberately, her fingers working the edges until the paper was a neat rectangle, no larger than her palm. She placed it on the table beside her teacup, which had gone cold 10 minutes ago, and finally looked up at him. He stood in the doorway between the kitchen and the hall, his boots still damp from the sea, his net bag slung over one shoulder like a sack of grain. He was a broad man, not tall, but solidified by years of hauling weight through the shoulders, across the chest, in the forearms that were corded even at rest. His face was unreadable, a mask he wore when angry, which was to say not unreadable at all, but unreadable in the particular way that Enzo's anger was always unreadable. It did not flare, it did not crackle, it simply accumulated, layer upon layer, until it became something immovable. "I was just," she began. "Don't," he said, one syllable, sharp, final. He crossed the kitchen in 3 strides, the floorboards groaning beneath his weight, and reached for the letter. Concetta did not pull it away. She did not argue. She simply watched his hand close over the paper, watched the way his fingers curled around it with a casual familiarity that suggested he had done this before, or intended to, or both. He did not open it again. He did not read it a 4th time. He simply held it for a moment, his thumb resting on the folded edge, as though weighing it, measuring its value, deciding whether it was worth keeping or worth discarding. Then he walked to the door. He did not look back. He did not ask her what she wanted. He did not explain himself. He simply opened the door and stepped out into the hallway, his boots making a dull thud against the tiles, and Concetta sat at the table and listened to the sound of his footsteps fading, 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 until they were gone. She should have called after him. She should have stood up, followed him, demanded that he give her back the letter, demanded that he tell her what he meant by that single syllable, what he meant by the way he had taken it from her without raising his voice, without touching her, without doing anything that anyone else would have recognized as aggression. But she did not move. She remained seated, her hands folded in her lap, her eyes fixed on the empty space where the letter had been, and she listened to the house settling around her, the refrigerator humming, the clock ticking, the distant sound of the sea. She did not cry. She had cried when she first received the letter, in the post office, alone in the sorting room with the door locked and the blinds drawn, the way she cried when she was a girl and her mother had died, and there was no one to witness it and no one to pretend not to notice. But those tears were spent. They had been spent months ago, in the quiet hours before dawn, in the shower with the water running hot, in bed with her face pressed into Enzo's shoulder while he slept and did not wake. Those tears were gone. All that remained was the cold, hard certainty that she was trapped in a room with a man who had decided, without consulting her, without asking her permission, without even acknowledging that she existed as a person with desires and needs and claims, that the letter did not belong to her. She stood up, her knees cracked. She was 43 years old, and her body was beginning to remind her of it, stiffening with the morning chill that seeped through the kitchen tiles, a dull ache that whispered time was passing, that she was not the girl who had met Andrea at the festival in August, not the woman who had held his hand at the cemetery when they buried the uniform and the name on marble, not even the woman who had walked up the hill to the harbor master's office and asked questions she was not supposed to ask. She was simply a woman in a kitchen, standing at a table, staring at a cup of cold tea, and the letter was gone. She washed the cup. She dried it. She placed it in the cupboard above the stove, next to the others, in the row where they were arranged by size and shape, nested tightly like puzzle pieces, a geometric order Concetta liked. Then she went to the window and looked out at the street, at the rooftops, at the sliver of sea visible between two houses, gray and restless and indifferent to whatever was happening inside the house that overlooked it. Enzo was already at the water. She knew it with the certainty of the tide coming in, the sun rising, and the post truck arriving at 8:30 tomorrow morning to deliver sacks counted 3, 4, 5 for sorting, right for letters, left for parcels, center for postcards. These were the rhythms of her 20 years at La Posta, as familiar as the shape of her own hands. She knew them as she knew Andrea was alive or dead or somewhere in between, though the truth mattered less than the lie built around it. The lie that had become the foundation of their lives, the walls of this house, and the cage Enzo had decided, without asking her, was the only place she would live inside. She dressed in the bedroom, changing out of her day clothes into the apron she wore when she cooked, the one with the faded floral pattern that Nana Rosa had bought her 20 years ago and never stopped reminding her about. She tied it around her waist, smoothed it down, and went downstairs. The kitchen was empty. The table was clear. The letter was gone. She opened the cupboard and took down the pot she used for pasta, filled it with water, set it on the stove, and lit the flame. The blue circle of fire bloomed beneath the metal, steady and reliable and utterly useless. She did not go to the harbor. She did not walk down the hill to find Enzo, to stand on the quay and watch him untie La Barca and push off into the water, to wait until he came back and demand that he give her back what he had taken. She stayed in the kitchen. She chopped onions. She diced tomatoes. She stirred the sauce as it simmered, slow and steady, maintaining the rhythm that had sustained her for 43 years, a continuity that would outlast Enzo, outlast the house, and outlast the village itself. She cooked because cooking was something she could control. She cooked because the recipe was fixed, the measurements were known, the outcome was predictable. She cooked because it gave her hands something to do while her mind raced ahead, backward, sideways, through the labyrinth of everything she had found and everything she had not, everything Enzo had taken and everything he had kept, everything Andrea had written and everything he had not. By the time the sauce was ready, the light had begun to lean gold against the rooftops, heavy and amber as late October in this village built around the sun and the sea and the belief that some things were fixed and permanent and could not be moved. She ladled the sauce into a bowl, set it on the table, and waited for Enzo to come home. He came at 6. He came at 6:30. He came at 7. He came without speaking, without looking at her, without acknowledging that she had been waiting, that she had been sitting at the table with the bowl of sauce cooling in front of her, that she had been thinking about the letter, about the photograph, about the way Andrea had smiled in a city that was not Marseille and was not this village and was not anywhere she had ever known. They ate in silence. Nana Rosa ate in silence. The boys ate in silence. The only sound was the scrape of forks against plates, the clink of glasses, the occasional cough, the distant bark of a dog, the sound of the sea crashing against the rocks below the harbor, steady and endless and indifferent to whatever was happening inside the house that overlooked it. After dinner, Enzo cleared the table. He stacked the plates. He rinsed them. He placed them in the drying rack, one by one, in the order they had been used, the way he always did. Concetta watched him from the doorway, her arms folded across her chest, her fingers digging into her sleeves, and she wanted to say something. She wanted to ask him why. She wanted to ask him what he thought he was protecting, what he thought he was preventing, what he thought would happen if she read the letter one more time, if she studied the photograph, if she tried to trace the handwriting, if she tried to understand the French phrases that Andrea had used, the ones that sounded different from the Italian ones, the ones that sounded like he was speaking to someone else, someone who was not her, someone who was newer, closer, more deserving of his words. But she did not say anything. She simply stood in the doorway and watched Enzo stack the last plate and turn off the tap and wipe his hands on a towel. And she knew, with the same cold certainty that had driven her to the church door and to the harbor master's office and to the post office and to the cemetery and to every other place she had gone in search of a truth that might set her free, that she was not going to get the letter back. Not today, not tomorrow, not ever. Enzo dried his hands. He hung the towel on the hook by the sink. He turned to her. His face was blank, not angry, not sad, not even tired. Simply blank, the way a man's face is blank when he has decided that speaking is pointless, when he has decided that explanation is unnecessary, when he has decided that the matter is closed and the conversation is over and there is nothing left to say. "It's gone," he said. Two words, simple, clear, final. Concetta nodded. She did not argue. She did not protest. She simply nodded, the rigid, mechanical dip of her chin that she reserved for Padre Salvador's commands, for Nana Rosa's orders, and for Enzo's silences the same hollow gesture she used to swallow her own questions until they were buried like Andrea. She turned and walked away, moving down the corridor past the kitchen, past the living room, past the staircase leading to the bedrooms, and out the back door onto the little terrace where the scent of basil and rosemary and thyme rose from the small patch of earth. The herbs she used every day, the herbs she had learned to grow from Nana Rosa, who had learned them from her mother, who had learned them from hers. The way knowledge passed through women in this village, not through books or schools or conversations, but through repetition, through practice, through the quiet accumulation of skills that were never taught but always known. She stood on the terrace and looked out at the sea. It was dark now, the surface rippling in the moonlight, the waves breaking against the rocks with a sound that was almost musical, almost rhythmic, almost like breathing. She could see the outline of La Speranza in the harbor, moored at the quay, its hull dark against the water, its sails furled, its nets hanging from the rigging like spider webs in the light. Somewhere out there, beyond the harbor, beyond the bay, beyond the coastline that curved around the village like a protective arm, Enzo had thrown the letter into the sea. He had stood on the edge of the quay or on the deck of his boat, the letter in his hand, and he had let it go, watching it fall, watching it hit the water, watching it sink beneath the surface, disappearing into the darkness, into the cold, into the depth, into the place where things went when they were meant to be forgotten. She could not tell whether he had read it, whether he had understood it, or whether he cared about what Andrea had written, what he had asked, what he had promised, what he had confessed. All she knew was that the letter was gone, and that Enzo had taken it, and that he had destroyed it, and that he had done so without raising his voice, without touching her, without doing anything that anyone else would have recognized as aggression, and that this was the most aggressive thing he had ever done. She went back inside, she locked the back door, she turned off the light. She climbed the stairs to the bedroom, where Enzo was already in bed, lying on his side, facing the wall, his breathing steady and deep. The breathing of a man who had worked hard and earned his sleep and did not carry the weight of the world on his shoulders the way she did. The way she carried it every day, every hour, every minute. The way she carried it even when she slept, even when she dreamed, even when she was unconscious and vulnerable and unable to protect herself from the things that were coming. The things that were inevitable, the things that Enzo had tried to throw into the sea but could not, could not, could not. She lay down beside him. She did not touch him. She did not speak to him. She simply lay there, in the dark, in the silence, in the bed that she shared with a man who had decided that her curiosity was a threat, that her questions were dangerous, that her desire to know was a form of betrayal, and she closed her eyes and she waited for sleep, and she waited for morning, and she waited for the next letter, the next clue, the next fragment of truth that would float to the surface, that would find its way back to her, that would refuse to be drowned. The house was quiet, the sea was restless. Concetta, who had spent 43 years learning the shape of silence, knew, with absolute certainty, that she was not done listening.